Hey, I'm Pete Krull, and this is Dollars and Change, the expert's guide to sustainable investing. And we are here live on location in Huntington Beach, California for the Future Proof Conference. And I have my friend Jeff Gitterman with me, who is also a sustainable investing registered investment advisor. And so welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Pete.
I was really excited when we set this up. We were going to originally do it by Zoom, but I'm like, hey, Jeff's here in sunny Southern California, and if we're backlit, we apologize, but we just want to make sure you all are jealous and can see the beach behind us.
Yes.
So I want to start out and just talk a little bit about your background in financial services, and then I also want to follow up to that, so I'm going to give you basically two questions here. The first being your background in financial services, but the second, talk about your transition from traditional investment services to sustainable work.
Okay. Been in the industry 34 years now. Started at Merrill Lynch back in 86.
I'm a Merrill Lynch recovering person as well.
I think that makes it like 37 years, but I don't even want to admit that. And did traditional investing up until 2014.
Okay.
And then in 2014, I got introduced to a gentleman named Guy Reed that was making a movie called Planetary.
Okay.
And the movie was with Bill McKibben and Paul Hawken and Ron Garin, the astronaut, group of indigenous elders, biologists, Joanna Macy, Buddhist teachers, and it was about really telling a different story between our relationship to each other and the planet,
yeah,
but steeped in climate and what was going on with the planet at the time. And it had a big impact on me. I will say, egoically at first, because I was doing a lot of this stuff in my personal life.
Uh-huh.
So I got a chance to be introduced to all these people to help. Really, at first, just to be introduced to them. But then secondly, I decided to put some money in to make sure the film got made. And more because in my personal life, I was focused on a lot of the themes that were in the movie. I'd written a book called Beyond Success, Redefining the Meaning of Prosperity, and was very interested in how consciousness and success and happiness kind of go together. And when the movie came out,
that's very untraditional investment advisor behavior to start talking about that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you, and I want to know what, you know, where did that come from?
I had a very deep spiritual connection as an early boy. You know, both my parents were atheists.
Okay.
And I will say this, because I think it makes a lot of rational sense for people that don't know what you mean when you say you had a deep spiritual connection. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't a religious thing. For me, I was convinced at a very young age that I had chosen to be here.
Okay.
I didn't believe in that this experience was by chance. I can't back that up with anything
right.
fundamental or concrete. By the time I was 4 and 5 years old, I was convinced that I had made the choice to be here.
Did you see a path at that point?
No.
Or you just knew that you were supposed to be here?
No. My only path was, if I had chosen to be here, I should make the best of it. And I had seen a spiritual teacher one day give a talk. I wasn't following him or anything, on happiness. And he said, if I ask you about life, is it a fundamental, like, yes for you?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a no for you? Like, how do you feel about life? And I felt yes about life. So I thought it was my responsibility to try to make the best of it. And that meant learning as much as I could about how to manage the experience.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I think that's interesting. So please carry on what you were saying before. But I think that that's so unique in this industry that you sort of had hit that, and I'm going to use the freaking word, the woke or awakened mentality way before anybody else was even talking about that, at least in popular culture.
And then I would go around for ING back in the day and talk about this.
Okay.
At conferences all around the country, because I was the top producer in the early 2000s for ING. You would be surprised. You probably wouldn't.
Okay.
I think most people would be surprised that most financial advisors got into this business to help people. I always say, if you got in it just for money, you went into investment banking.
Right.
If you're a financial planner.
Or VC or something like that, too.
But if you're in this there's some calling that's driving you to want to serve.
Yep.
So you'd be surprised how many people I have found that meditate or do yoga or have a spiritual practice that kind of helps them in their financial practice.
Right.
So this movie comes along. It's a weird fluke of events. After the conversation, I just was introduced to him because the themes in my book were a lot like some of the themes in the movie. So someone thought we should meet. At the end of it, I'm like, let me give you some money for the movie. He never asked me for a penny.
Right.
I gave him a check. Regardless, doesn't matter what the check amount was for.
Right. You wanted to be invested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was a good thing.
Yeah.
I liked the idea. About a year later, the movie has an early premiere at Red Bull Studios in New York City. I get invited. I'm sitting in the audience. And this guy gets up and tells his story about the movie and the Kickstarter campaign that they were running to fund the movie and how the Kickstarter campaign was going to fail. And then he met this guy, and he just met this guy to have a conversation with him. Had never asked him for any money. And at the end of the meeting, it was the last day of the Kickstarter campaign. This guy happened to give me a check for the exact amount of money that the Kickstarter campaign was going to fail by that day. And he saved the movie. And as a thank you, we've made him associate producer of the film. And they pull up the screen. To this minute, I have no idea that he's talking about this. And I look up, and there on the screen is associate producer of Planetary, Jeff Gitterman. And I'm like, what? It like didn't even register.
Wow.
And that's why I say egoically at first, because then it dawned on me a little while after that. They asked me to go on some speaking tours with the movie, that my business life was not aligned with my personal life.
Oh, interesting.
And it hit me really hard as a truth. And I decided to move my financial practice 100%.
That gave me chills.
It's a cool story.
That is a great story, because I do believe that there, you know, I do believe in the idea that, you know, we're all just an electron apart from one another, and that there is sort of a quantum connection. And that certainly sounds like a quantum connection to me.
For sure.
Absolutely. So you made it, so that was the point at which you said, you know what, I need to start aligning my business with who I am.
Yeah.
And so how did you go about making that transition? Because and how long had you had your firm at that point?
I had been running it for 15 years, really.
Okay, so it was pretty entrenched at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had a lot of 23 people, 13 advisors, a lot of people that were doing things differently. Mm-hmm. Brought in a corporate coach from Stanford to talk about the fact that I was going to do this big transition. And she said, you're going to lose 60% of your firm if you do that. Didn't try to talk me out of it. Just said, you need to know. You're going to lose.
Eyes wide open.
Because people don't like change.
Right.
They won't just change with you because you're changing.
I get it.
And then I went on a two-year educational tour, and I started meeting with reinsurers first, actually.
Okay.
Asset managers in Europe, climate scientists, ultimately. Started reading all the books about climate change. And that was really my entry point, was climate.
Okay.
And I came away from this two-year tour because I have a background in systems thinking.
Okay.
Everyone I met with, so I met with scientists who were climate scientists specifically around ocean temperature or glacial experts, that all, there's 100 or more different fields you could be in within climate science.
Yeah.
Each climate scientist I met with said, my vertical is breaking down in all different respects.
Right.
The glaciers are melting, the temperatures are warming, the coral reefs are dying, the, you know, agricultural soil is being depleted. And because of my systems background, my view of that was that they were all missing the cascading effect of multiple systems breaking down at the same time.
Because they're all sort of cloistered in their own little, and my wife's a scientist as well, and
they're
she talks about that.
Sleeve.
Yeah, and that's good that we have people that are very, very deep into what they do, but, you know, Melissa does science communication, and a big part of science communication is you have to be able to communicate your science, and if you're not able to do that, obviously with the public, but even within other scientists, then we get stuck in the situation you're talking about.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I came back to my firm and said, we're going to focus on climate. The only way to focus on climate in 2016 was through ESG. There was no climate data that was available through the financial markets at that point.
Yep.
So we started going in deep on ESG. We have a very strong...
Did you lose 60% like she said?
Yes.
Did you really?
It took 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
But from 16 to 20, we lost about 60% of the employees in the firm.
They just couldn't buy, they just didn't buy into your vision of it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they didn't want to cut out half of the population that they could serve, that didn't believe, even though we serve mostly college professors.
Uh-huh.
College professors, pretty much 98% are on the side that climate change is real.
Absolutely.
I really think before that I was kind of bifurcated. I had these personal interests about spirituality or peace or happiness. Uh-huh. And I had a drive to be successful and make money over here.
So you had to set those down to go to work.
Yeah.
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 I get that. What I don't understand, because, you know, I've been doing sustainable investing a little longer. I started the firm in 2004. I don't think that you're actually excluding 50% of the population. I think ultimately you're able to actually focus yourself, and you actually can focus on the people. It's better from a marketing perspective, knowing very specifically who you can work with and who wants to work with you. Because a generalist, you don't have anything that makes you special.
Right.
When you're investing sustainably, or you're an advisor, you're special because not everybody's doing it. And so it's unfortunate for those folks who left, because I think that they really missed out.
Yeah, but in hindsight, they weren't aligned.
Yeah,
and
I get it.
It worked. This is not something. There's a lot of things you could sell that you aren't passionate about.
True.
Sustainability is not one of them.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, I think you have to walk the walk, you know, drive EVs or have solar power, whatever it is, whatever is important to you. It makes it much easier to sell if you own the product and you believe in the product.
For sure.
Absolutely. Okay. And so that you made that transition in what year?
So we made it official in early 17.
Okay.
That, because we had been running models behind the scenes since 15. It's got to be a passion for you. And
right.
I agree with what you were saying, that it creates a market for you, but it's a market that people will see right through you if
right.
you don't have a passion for the space. If you can't walk the walk and talk the talk, people will ferret that out pretty quickly. I mean, look, we're sitting here in an environment. I'm just going to tell the story because you said I could be controversial.
Please do so.
I'm walking by the street about 100 feet to the right, and there's a truck with an ad on the truck, a video ad mm-hmm. playing on the sidewalk at the parking spot, whatever. And it's climate change commercial.
Okay.
And it's about how the world is changing and climate change is here, and there are going to be stranded assets from fossil fuels because we're going to have to transition. And in the end, it turns out it's a Vanguard commercial. And I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
When I think climate change proponents, I don't think Vanguard.
No.
So I decide, because about 100 feet directly facing that ad is the Vanguard booth. And it says, go see our Vanguard booth at Future Proof. So I'm like, I need to test.
Oh, I would have done
this
same
hypothesis.
Thing. I would have done
so
the exact
I walk right
thing.
To the Vanguard booth.
Yeah.
And you can still, it's playing over and over again. They're not moving. They're stuck there.
Yeah.
I go to the Vanguard booth and they say, hi, how can we help you? And I say, I'm interested to learn about climate change. And they look stunned. Like they saw a ghost, I would say would be the operable word. And they're like, excuse me? And I said, yeah, I'm interested to hear about your climate change solutions. And they're like, oh, there's 8, 9 Vanguard people there. And they're like, let me see if I can find someone to talk to you. So I said, you know, this is interesting. I say to the person who is going to try to find someone to talk to, I said, you're running an ad directly over there across from your booth that says, come to this booth to learn about climate change. They go, what? So I say, look, I point. You could see the ad running.
Yeah.
All 8 people leave the booth. Empty and go to watch the ad for the first time. They've never seen this ad before. And come back and basically say there's one strategy that Bailey Gifford sub-advises that has a climate focus.
Yeah.
And that's
which probably owns fossil fuels.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, and you know, I've got sort of the same feeling about BlackRock and the I don't want to call it like intentional misinformation, but there certainly is misinformation where they're, you know, equating ESG and sustainable investing and things like that, which is, you know, ultimately a problem because the public doesn't know this stuff the same way we do.
Right.
And
no one knows what ESG means.
I know that. Yeah. I know, especially politicians. They have no idea what it means. Yeah. Yeah. You know, other than it's a method to divide us, right?
It's just woke capitalism.
It's woke capitalism. Thank you, Mr. Pence.
It's more of a Vivek, I think. It's a big Vivek.
So you transitioned. So what was the process then to actually transition the practice from being traditional into being sustainable? I know you've created products like UMAs and different things like that over time, but where did you start? How did you get started?
Yeah, I'd say we were good timing in a way, because Morningstar had just came out with their sustainability goals right before this, and it at least gave us a starting point to view the world. And then we started running some models with our own money, or some without money, just running them on Morningstar. And then we would go meet with the managers and talk to the managers. And we found out pretty quickly that the manager might not have any idea what the wholesaler or the prospectus is saying about the fund.
Right.
Which was very disconcerting. I won't pick on any names for this one, but there were a lot of people that we thought were doing a good job that we discovered own stuff under the hood, because we would look under the hood with the tools.
To. Yes. I preach that every day.
Yes, for sure. And we were very disappointed that a lot of people were holding stuff that they couldn't even justify in a conversation. Mm. We would call the manager and say, why are you holding gun stock?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd be like, we're holding gun stock.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of work, and we eventually culled our funds to managers that were doing ESG by prospectus and could answer a due diligence questionnaire that backed up what the prospectus said.
Right.
And then the manager can get on an hour call and regurgitate what the due diligence questionnaire said, because a lot of managers couldn't. A lot of times it was an analyst in the home office that was filling out the due diligence questionnaire.
And then you could actually see the proof in the pudding when you looked under the hood to see what they were holding.
Yeah, then we would test the
funds.
And we would test the funds periodically, because fund holdings change.
And managers change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we found the same thing too.
And it's what led us to the UMA, because we realized pretty quickly that without having some control filters on the holdings, we were not going to make every end client happy with one model.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
We decided to build a UMA model with Natixis as our partner to run the trades so that we controlled the trading.
Okay.
We could filter all the holdings right out of Natixis through Bloomberg and our own tools and Morningstar and MSCI. So we can watch the portfolios, and we could give the end client what people were buying from Ethic and Aperio and other companies. We could give them the values questionnaire so they could filter the portfolio further from what we were doing on an ESG and climate base.
Gotcha.
So we would run the ESG and climate diligence. We would let the client, and every end client could alter the portfolio their own way, but with active management.
Nice. So it really sort of the best of both worlds is what it sounds like.
That's what we think.
Yeah. Where do you see, there's been so much controversy of late, and of course I think it's manufactured controversy. I'm sure you think the same thing. Where do you see us going from here? You know, we're in 2023. You've been in the business for 10 years or so. I've been in the business for almost 20 years, seen all kinds of different changes, all kinds of different acronyms, you know, just so much has happened. Where do you see the business going from a financial services perspective, from a regulatory perspective, and from a client perspective for that matter?
I mean, unfortunately, our world is becoming more and more bifurcated and divided. I don't think that is going to change until we hit some kind of breaking point. I expect that will affect our industry. And I think in a positive way, you can cater to that, because if you have a strong position, you can serve that strong position.
Right.
And if you know who you are and you're willing to say who you are, then people will find you.
Yeah.
So I think in a way, that part is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think from an industry standpoint, that we're going to eventually come to the point, and this is something I've been talking a lot about lately, that we're really arguing stakeholder capitalism versus shareholder capitalism.
Okay.
it's being couched in a woke capitalism values fossil fuel wrapper. But at the end of the day, if you really boil down what the actual discussion is about, it's do you care about your community, your employees, your customers, the river that your customers and employees drink from? If you care about all that, that's what sustainability is driven by.
Right.
You can then go in a bunch of different tracks on sustainability for sure, but at the heart of the matter is you either care about stakeholder capitalism or you don't. And when I did the interview with Strive Asset Management and Sphere, I did a debate between the two of them. Strive Asset Management admitted that climate change was real and that ESG, if it was material, should be included in the process. Where they greatly differed was between shareholder capitalism and stakeholder capitalism. They were very clear that they only cared about shareholder capitalism.
Yeah, and that's so short-sighted because every single one of those factors contributes to a business's success or failure, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, those are all the tenets of like B Corporation, for example. It's all about shareholder or stakeholder capitalism. Right. So, do you see any regulations coming down the line that might affect us?
I mean, I do, but the SEC has such little teeth with a Republican House. It's just incredibly difficult. They know that whatever they come out with in the fall, they're going to be riddled with lawsuits the minute they publish it. So they're trying to find something that has a little bit of teeth, like maybe your two front teeth but no molars, like and that's an impossible task because the Republican Party is going to sue immediately. There'll be 15 lawsuits the minute the
It's going to come from AGs and you know all the red states.
But what's interesting for me is if you're a manager in the U.S. and you serve a European market, you've got to abide by the European rules.
Yes,
you do. It doesn't matter what U.S. does. And most managers don't want to just raise money in the U.S.
Right.
Managers that have come out of the gate strong on ESG as part of their process of picking and selecting stocks are in no way backing off from that, regardless of what comes out of the SEC. And it'll just scare more advisors away for a while, which sucks. But
I mean, my argument is that if you're not looking at environmental, social, and governance factors, you're not fulfilling your fiduciary duty.
Right. For sure.
You know, because the more data we have, the better advisors we can be at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, you know my metaphor is ESG is the GPS of investing.
Right.
And we say to clients all the time, when we meet with them, and I say this to advisors all the time, if you had a choice today between having to drive from New York to California and taking a map or taking your GPS, what would you take?
Right.
You'd take your GPS. Would you call it woke driving? No. You'd take your GPS because it has more data about road closures and detours and cops hiding in the bushes and traffic. That's all ESG is. It's more data about the company that you're investing in that is material to the stock performance price of that company. No one that actually understands it would argue against it.
Absolutely. Although my dad really loved his triptychs back in the day from AAA when we used to do that.
Wait, did you have a compass? Because my dad would take
We didn't do the compass.
We were poor, so my dad would take the map out and he'd put it on the dining room table on top of the pads that protected the dining room table. And he'd take out the compass and he'd calculate on the compass how far like a 2-hour drive was. And he'd decide that's where we could afford a weekend trip. And he'd spin the compass around and we, myself and my sister, could pick any location in that 2-hour circle.
Oh, I love this.
All I was focused on was how sharp that like people don't have compasses anymore.
No, because that many people lost eyes because of that.
Yeah. My only thing that was going through my head at this point was if someone breaks into the house, that's the weapon I'm going for in the house. But yeah, that's how we took trips.
You know, I could sit literally and chat with you all day because, I mean, we have sat and had drinks and continued to talk until it got dark before. But I'm going to wrap up with my final question. And so
make it a good one.
It is a good one. So there's a lot of negative news out there, both on the ESG side, but also, you know, we've got climate change effects are hitting. We've got you know, fires in Hawaii. We're in Southern California, which was threatened by a hurricane not long ago, which never happens. How do you, in the face of all this, maintain hope?
So I will say that it goes back to my choice.
I figured that's where you were going to go with it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the softball. But.
You're welcome.
If I made a choice to be here, then I made a choice to be here at this time. I'm an intensely curious person. So climate change is an ever-changing topic that feeds my curiosity in a way that many other subjects couldn't. Mm-hmm. I'm a chaos operator. I had a tough childhood, so I was trained in chaos on a daily basis.
Was it the compass?
It was the compass. It was the guy yielding the compass that was the problem.
Understood.
But it trained me to really be awake and alert to threats. And I thrive in chaos, and we're living in a time of chaos. So I just find solace in the fact that I was born for this moment and that I can contribute to improving this moment.
Excellent.
That's where I
love that.
Focused.
I love that.
I think that makes 100 of those.
I believe it does. I've been counting. 97, actually.
Yes.
Jeff, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
The garbage was great.
The garbage was definitely great. It was definitely a nice diversion.